nice Jewish boy behaved me, Krishna monk. That's something that I discuss more in detail in a book that should be coming out in about a year called Vanity Karma. Vanity Karma. But you have to wait a year. But so to answer the question more immediately, first thing is, I don't think it was very nice. Nice Jewish boy, but not so nice. Not really. And then the second thing is, I wasn't really Jewish. Like so many people, I had a religion. I belonged to a religion, more or less as a family inheritance, a sort of tribal identity. My parents are such and such, so I'm such and such. My parents are Jewish or Presbyterian or Episcopalian or Baha'i or what have you, and so I'm also that. And that doesn't carry a whole lot of meaning just off the shelf. Even someone said, my parents are Hare Krishna, so I'm Hare Krishna. That also doesn't immediately mean something. There has to be some authentic spiritual experience or some authentic spiritual understanding. Otherwise, just my parents are such and such, so I'm such and such, doesn't really count for a lot. So we may find ourselves, as I did, more or less, this, so what? This doesn't mean anything. But then you ask yourself, well, what does mean something? And the answer may be, well, not a whole heck of a lot. What is the value of money? What is the value of fame? What is the value of position? What is the value of possessions? What is the value of, finally, of anything that we may acquire? It comes and then it goes. You work very hard to get whatever it is that you want, and then it turns out to be not what you wanted, or it's just what you wanted and you lose it, or finally we die and it's all gone. So, is that all there is? To work hard and get something which may or may not be what I want and then die? These are the questions that a thoughtful person must ask. What is my life for? I was at someone's house and their high school yearbook was there. And there's a section where the kids are all saying what they want to be. I want to have my own garage. I want to meet Mr. Wright and have a whole lot of kids. I want, you know, this and that. And you look at it and say, that's what you want? In your life, the perfection of your life is to have a garage? Or a Mr. Wright and a whole lot of kids. And that's what you're here for. That's your highest goal in existence. So often the question's not asked. That's not what school is for, certainly. We go to school and we get an education. But we don't get that much. Most important questions are not asked, and if they were asked, they couldn't be effectively answered. So it was facing those circumstances, those questions, that drifting about in the 1960s, when almost everyone drifted about, I came in touch with the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. I didn't actually come in touch with the society. First I came in touch with chanting. Then I came into touch with the devotees, and I found out that there was something called the society. And in the course of things, of course, I came in touch with Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada was teaching Bhakti Yoga. And in the definition of Bhakti Yoga, it is the first line in the definition is Sarvopadi Dinir Bhuktam. Sarvo Upadi. Upadi means a bodily designation, which is a sort of a fancy term. But it's like a label that goes with the body, as in, I am American, or I am French, or I am German, or I am Italian, or I am Spanish, or I am white, or I am black, or I am thin, or I am fat, or I am old, or I am young, or I am Jewish, or I am Christian, or I am Hindu. I'm Jones, or I'm Smith, or I'm something else. Yeah, it looks like you're having a hard time finding the baby. These are all upadis, or body tags. Bodily designations. And the first line says that none of these designations actually identify me, because I'm not the body. And all the designations come with the body. Because my father is Mr. Jones, so I'm a Jones. Because my parents are American, I'm American. If you're born in America, your body is born. Body is black, you are black, or white, or something else. Well, this all pertains to the body. And the first understanding in spiritual progress is that I'm not the body. The body is a machine. Yantra, Bhutani, Bhakara, pneumatic, hydraulic thing held together with sticky tape and rubber bands. A contraption. And this is not actually what we are. And Prabhupada pointed out, we don't say I hand or I leg or I head. We say my hand, my leg, my head. Because all of these things belong to me. And so the body also belongs to me, my body. But I'm not the body. I'm the consciousness within the body. Evolutionary sort of understanding. Why do I say that the most important thing is America, or the most important thing is Jewishness, or blackness, or whiteness, or Jonesness? What does this have to do with me? These are essentially illusions. According to the Vedic understanding, these are illusions. What is illusion? Something is there, but it's not what I think it is. Here in Arizona, I suppose that you may have sometimes have these mirages, and it appears to be water. And it's not water, it's a mirage. It's heat rising from the highway or whatever it may be. But it's not what we think it is. The example given is mistaking a rope for a snake. The rope is something, the snake is something, but the rope is not a snake. But the body is something. But it's not what I think it is. It's not me. It's the car I'm riding.
Well, that's the first
understanding, that I'm not the body. tatpratena nirvana, I'm consciousness, and that consciousness is meant to be pure consciousness. When I'm identifying with something temporary, then it's adulterated consciousness. It's consciousness in touch with matter and affected by time. And the chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is meant to purify our consciousness. Chaito Dharma Martina. By hearing this transcendental sound, by chanting this transcendental sound, our consciousness gradually becomes purified. We get practical realization that the body is not the self. We get practical realization that we have a higher identity, that we have a higher purpose in life. And we gradually become clear-minded, so that with a clear mind we can understand ourselves and understand Krishna, or the source of everything. There is a source of everything. Everything has some source, and that has a source, and that has a source. And we ask, what is the ultimate source? That's a natural human question. What is the source of everything? And from the Vedic understanding, we come to Krishna. There's matter and there's consciousness. In our experience, there's matter and there's consciousness. The matter is inferior, and consciousness is superior. My hand is matter, but the consciousness tells the hand what to do. The building is made of matter, but consciousness has molded it in a certain way for a certain purpose. So consciousness is higher. So on the cosmic level also we have matter, but there must be consciousness directed in matter. And it's not my consciousness. Not your consciousness. There's a supreme consciousness. As I'm conscious of my little turf, and maybe conscious of your area and the next person of his area, there's a supreme consciousness of consciousness through whom whole cosmic manifestations properly. Just as there might be a building, an apartment building. I know my apartment, you know your apartment. But the landlord knows all the apartments. So I know my body, you know your body. If I have a pain, I feel it. If you have a pain, you're the one who feels it. But Krishna knows all the bodies and all that exists. He's the all-pervading consciousness. I can't say I'm the all-pervading consciousness. I know everything, everywhere. But Krishna can say that. There's limited consciousness and more expanded consciousness. Human consciousness is more expanded than animal consciousness. But when you come to Krishna, he's the ultimate conscious being. And because we are part of what exists, we have a relationship with Krishna. And that relationship is that of a part to a whole. As my hand is part of the body, so everyone else is part of Krishna. And our present problem is that I've forgotten my relationship with Krishna, and I'm trying to exist and be happy independently, like a hand trying to be happily independent. That doesn't work. The hand has to be connected with the body and serving the interests of the whole body, and the hand will be very happy. The hand gets some food and tries to keep it in the palm. That will work. The hand has to put the food in the body, in the stomach, and then the hand will be happy. So, Rishikena Rishikesha Seva. When we use all of our senses, everything that we have, in the service of the of Krishna, the supreme master of the senses, the supreme personality of God, then we're situated in bhakti. Bhakti means the pure consciousness of devotional service. Pure consciousness, that's the first thing. We want to come to a platform in which our consciousness is pure. But then, when I'm on that platform, what do? Here I am on that platform. Yes, I am. There has to be activity. When there's activity, then there's real life. So you go to Paris, so you have to do something. You can't just say, well, here I am in Paris. You have to go see the Eiffel Tower. You have to do something. Otherwise, what's the use? So, to be situated on the platform of pure consciousness means to act in pure consciousness. In adulterated consciousness, I'm acting, but it's all for the senses of the body, the needs of the body, the imagined things that will make the body happy or make me happy. And it doesn't work, no matter what I get, I'm not genuinely satisfied. But when I engage all my effort, all my endeavors in the service of Krishna, then I'm acting in my natural spiritual position. When the hand serves the body, the hand is working in its perfect situation. And when we serve the Supreme Consciousness, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then as conscious beings, as living beings, we're acting in the ideal spiritual situation. And this is Krishna consciousness. To act in pure consciousness for the service of Krishna. And it has nothing to do with Jewish or Hindu or Christian or white or black or American or this or that. It has to do with our natural eternal function. Our natural eternal function. So that can be revived by this process of bhakti yoga, by hearing about Krishna, by chanting Hare Krishna, by some simple practices that purify the heart. And the more one continues in this process, the more one experiences how he's advancing. And when one attains liberation, when one leaves the body, as we all must, instead of having to continue in the cycle of material birth and death, to which material consciousness obliges us to continue, we get freedom from this cycle and go back to Krishna. Back to Krishna means not to some amorphous, hazy, dispersed cloud of somethingness or nothingness. It means that as there's a world here, there's a world there. But that world is the world of perfection. And this is the world of imperfection or of suffering. The world where things don't work. Where we get old, diseased, and die. And go through it again, that's not what we want. And it's not what we're meant for. We're meant for the company of Krishna, the service of Krishna, in the real world, of which this world is just a reflection, a crooked reflection. All of these things are discussed in our books, like Bhagavad Gita, as it is, and their accessible to every one of us. And we can realize these topics in the association of devotees, in the association of those who are cultivating this Krishna consciousness for which we have this society started by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada, and continued by those who are following in this process. So I'll stop here and see what kind of questions there might be. I remember last week there were hundreds and hundreds of questions. For this is we're advised to take guidance from those who are more advanced. We want to be on, I think, well, we'll do this for Krishna, do this for that, we could also scheme for Krishna. But in the association of devotees, we get direction that this would be pleasing to Krishna. That would be pleasing to Krishna. You can do this for Krishna. Because they're acting under the guidance of a pure devotee of Krishna or a spiritual master. So when we come into their association, we start to get good direction. You can do this. Don't go to the tavern for Krishna. Come to the temple, clean the floor for Krishna, or sew some garlands for Krishna, make some garlands for Krishna. Or there's so many things to do. There's so many things that can be done to please Krishna. And in the association of devotees, we learn those things. And gradually we ourselves accept a spiritual master for personal guidance, and we get further instruction. And then we can help. Is that okay?
Because you mentioned that the different bodily designations, Judaism and Christianity and different faiths are included. And I understand that which religion one comes into is largely based on geographical location, but still they preach something spiritual, something beyond the body.
They do.
So I was curious if they could just as easily turn it around and say that Hare Krishna is a bodily designation.
Yeah, Hare Krishna is also a bodily designation. It's simply my mommy is a Hare Krishna, so I'm a Hare Krishna. What is that? How much substance is there to that? And does it mean that because mommy is self-realized or daddy is self-realized, I'm also self-realized? Prabhupada sometimes said everyone has to fly his own plane. And in fact, I meet young people who are who grew up in the Hare Krishna movement, and they have the same question. You know, all right, my mother's a Hare Krishna, my father's a Hare Krishna, and so I go to the Hare Krishna temple and I chant Hare Krishna, but what makes it go? You know, what brings it above the platform of just sort of a ritual that I do or a church that I belong to? What brings it up to the level of something more of a brings it to the level of what inspired you people? Because it's not just official. And of course there are different answers to that question, but essentially one has to look at those questions that matter in life and go into them. Why am I here? What is my purpose in life? Why am I suffering? No, I'm not suffering. Oh, hell, you're not. every honest person will admit that it has so many troubles. Okay, that along with the troubles, there's good times, there are nice things. So that means we have a mixture of good things and bad things. A mixture of happiness and distress. And a mixture means it's a mess. If you have a mixture, you have a nice dish called kheer or sweetness, which is a kind of rice pudding with sugar and milk and really good. And you take that nice rice pudding and you say, this is good. And someone adds into it just a little teaspoonful of sand and mixes it well and says, you know, my philosophy in life is to take the good with the bad. Bon appetit. Mixture of good and bad means bad. Well, you can see the right side is still sweet, it's still full of nutrition. But the bad side is you're gritting your teeth on the sand. So a thoughtful person looks at our life and says, it's like that. That I'm getting some happiness, okay, I'm getting something I like, but it comes with these miseries. Miseries from the environment, miseries from other living beings, miseries from my body, miseries from my mind. Why is it like that? Why do I have to die? Why do I have to get old and suffer? A thoughtful person would think. If you don't ask these questions, it doesn't matter whether we're a Hare Krishna or a Presbyterian, Episcopalian, or Sufi. These questions have to be there. Then there can be authentic understanding.